In a world of Democrats,
there will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
And Republicans,
I've abandoned free market principles to save the free market system.
You need a voice of liberty. Look no further. You found it. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
Welcome to the Tom Woods Show, episode 303. We're talking today about schooling versus education. They are not the same thing. And we're talking to Brett Vanott, host of the School Sucks podcast, and he joins us today to talk about all kinds of issues from home education to so-called unschooling to resources that people can use, mistakes people sometimes make. Let's welcome Brett to the program.
Hey, everybody. This is Brett. Welcome back to the show. Today is December 12th. This is a supplemental installment of the podcast. Earlier this week, I had the pleasure of being on the Tom Woods radio show. Big show. And a happy little coincidence, an interesting little synchronicity. It was the end of last week, and I was watching a Tom Woods video on YouTube. I'm not making this up. I go over to my email, and I've got an invitation from the Tom Woods radio show. So last few months, I know I've posted a lot of supplemental things. I'm trying to get on as many shows as possible in an effort to attract new people into our audience. I did Radical Personal Finance, Red Ice Radio, The Sample Hour. I did Sex, Lies, and Anarchy a couple weeks in a row. I am doing The Sample Hour again. We actually recorded it last night. Next week, I'm going to be on something called The Ripple Effect. And I even did a podcast here called Rebel Love. And I feel like there might be a few other things scheduled. But trying to get out there. Usually people write to me and they say, "Oh, Brett, would you come on a podcast?" And I write back and say, "What do I look like?" And then I block them. But not this month. You know, I am focused on exposure. That was a joke. If you're new, that was a joke. I am happy to do interviews. And I felt like this Tom Woods interview was different enough, even though it was kind of an introductory thing, to post it here. And of course, like I said, the Tom Woods radio show is a big deal. And hopefully this draws some new folks into our audience. Lots of exciting stuff coming up. I hope you'll check out the episode right before this, Podcast Masters, Liberty Masterclass, where we talked about archaeology, crypto-archaeology, history, and conspiracy. Love Podcast Masters. We're thinking about doing it twice a month. I'm sitting down with Tony Myers tomorrow to record, Bill Buepert early next week. Daryl Becker will be back on the show. We're recording in the middle of next week, so I'm really excited about all the things I have scheduled on my little calendar. And I hope you're enjoying the show. I want to say thanks to everyone who answered the call, the fundraising call from the previous episode. We got, I would say, 7 or 8 new people and a few very generous one-time donations. And I will be thanking all of those people in an upcoming show. Oh, by the way, that reminds me, I do want to say thank you right now to Zachary Hartland, who sent me an awesome 100-foot Ethernet cable off our Amazon wish list. 100 feet, folks. Do you know how long that is? I mean, I'm looking at it right now. It seems like it goes on forever, but, by reading the packaging, I know that it is 100 feet. And somebody also sent me a 12-pack of acoustic foam, also from the Amazon wish list, but I don't have any idea who it was. So if it was you, can you please just send me an email, maybe with acoustic foam in the title, so I can thank you properly? It is the coolest acoustic foam I've ever had, and I'm really looking forward to putting it up. All right, here's my interview with Tom Woods. This is the audio from my end of the Skype call, so Tom will sound like he's on the phone. I listened to his version, and I sounded like I was on the phone, so maybe we didn't have the best Skype connection, but I figured since I talk a little bit more than he does, I'd give you my good audio. Okay, everybody, I will talk to you again soon. Have a great weekend. And we'll start the discussion here, already in progress.
Your podcast is, what category is it in iTunes? Do they have an education category?
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's actually quite a bit of competition in the education category because, you know, anything that's like foreign language instruction or how to, people throw it into the education category. I will say, though, that we are the only show that is consistently hitting on, you know, schooling versus education and looking at school issues and not so much delving into all the problems of school, like zero tolerance. We did that in the early days of the show and it got pretty tiring. Like now we're spending most of our time talking about what real education is, but also frequently reminding people that schooling, government schooling, is not that.
Well, I guess that's our starting point then.
Sure.
Before we can know that government schooling is not that, what is that then? In your view, what is education really all about?
Yeah, absolutely. To me, I think that education should really be self-directed, intrinsically motivated. It's lifelong. You know, it's not something that's fixed to 12 years or 12 years plus 4 years plus 2 years of graduate school to be really educated. I think that people develop negative attitudes about what they call education because it's always associated with force and pain and boredom. And I think a lot of adults are left unmotivated to learn more, about a broad range of topics because the learning experience of school was so miserable for so many of us. So most importantly, education is lifelong. It's intrinsically motivated. It's self-directed. And it's not something that somebody else gives you. It's something that you have to go out and seek for yourself.
It's important you make that point about it. It's not, education is more than just the time that you devote to formal study, that it is a lifelong process. That I hear a lot of people saying to me, it's such a shame that when I was in school, I didn't learn the things I should have learned. And, oh, well, no, just, you know, what can I do now?
Right.
Well, you have your whole life is what you can do now. There's so many things you can do now. I hardly know where to begin in telling you, but we've become conditioned to think of education as something you do sitting in an uncomfortable chair with a built-in desktop with a chalkboard in front of you. Listening to this podcast is a form of education. You know, reading any worthwhile book is a form of education.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, right now, what about this self-directed issue, though? The response that you're liable to get, and perhaps even from me, is that this whole thing about the education needs to be child-centered and self-directed, and we need the child to be motivated, and the way you motivate the child is letting the child pursue what happens to be of interest to that particular child.
Yeah,
that all seems to make sense, but there's that nagging feeling that a child just ain't going to be interested in the multiplication tables. And some
yeah.
things you just have to sit down and do, even though it is painful.
I think that you do. That's a very good point. And there is real instruction to be done, right? Like critical thinking, that classical education, that does involve a methodology that needs to be taught. I think that when you do have those things that need to be taught, you have to let it ride on top of the motivation and enthusiasm of the learner. So I'll give you an example. Last night we were doing a live show and our topic was crypto archaeology. And I was just remembering this story, like a few years ago, I was working with this homeschool boy. He as kind of just a facilitator and a guide. He was 8. He was absolutely fascinated by the Pseudo History Channel's program, Ancient Aliens. Are you familiar with this show?
I am not.
Okay. Have you heard of the ancient astronaut theory? Thousands of years ago, predating the great civilization of Egypt or Mesopotamia, aliens came and they seeded life on this planet or somehow genetically modified human beings into what we are today. And there's people who take this very seriously and they go back into the archaeological or anthropological records and they cherry pick information fits that argument. So there's a lot of confirmation bias. There's a lot of logical fallacies. But if you're 8 years old and you're really enthusiastic about the idea of aliens, you're not really ready to defend yourself against that. And that was the situation for this boy. So he has definitely had this high level of motivation to pursue the study of ancient aliens. And the whole time as the facilitator or the guide, I'm saying, oh, I don't know, this isn't good. Where's this going to go? And because he was enthusiastic, you know, I was able to check off things that I thought he really needed to learn. Like, how do you evaluate the evidence that other people present. And there was all kinds of scientific lessons about, you know, astronomy and archaeology and anthropology, excuse me, that we were able to check off along the way. So starting with something that is completely silly, you know, the ancient aliens theory, and even if that is a plausible theory, the way they go about presenting it on this show is just completely laden with fallacies and confirmation bias and begging the question. But through that silly exploration, we were able to have a meaningful educational experience. So I think that the learner being motivated is very important. But once you have a curious and motivated learner, yeah, that's that the stage is set for instruction to be possible.
So are you then an advocate of unschooling? Are you somebody whose view is that if that's what works for some people, that's fine, and if a more traditional structured curriculum works for somebody else, that's fine? Where do you come down on that?
I think it's different for everybody. I think anyone who wants to do home education, and I've tried to, in the last couple of years, even get away from the word unschooling because it has school in it. You know, so or homeschooling, especially only school can do school. We're trying to do education. So that means something totally different. I think that unschooling definitely has its challenges. I could see why people would balk at that, especially if they're concerned they're not going to be able to check off what they consider to be essential skills. And there's no debate about that. I mean, some things are essential skills. But I think that having that free environment where, you know, the learner can follow his or her own curiosity is very important. But remember, too, that parents have, even if they don't want to control their child or control the curriculum, they have control over that environment. So they can put things into that environment. I remember this boy I was telling you about, his parents had built this amazing classroom for him filled with resources and, you know, easy access to the internet and YouTube. So you can create opportunities within a relatively unstructured environment for, I think, the learning that you as the parent or the educator want to take place.
Brad, tell us about the podcast itself. You've got, how many episodes do you have so far?
Oh, gosh.
You've been doing it for a while, right?
Yeah, I think we recorded 322 last night. I mean, maybe all, I would say 350 different pieces of audio available on the website.
Wow, nice. Okay, well, this is episode 303 of this show. So
oh, wow.
We are catching up. We're catching up to you.
Yeah.
And by the way, the show notes page for this episode will be tomwoods.com/303. We'll have links to everything we're talking about here. Tell me about how you're able to talk about this stuff week in and week out and have fresh things to say. What kind of array of topics are you hitting on these days?
Yeah, that's a good question, because in the beginning, like back when I started in 2009, so much of this had built up. I mean, I had worked in and around the school system for over a decade. And in the 3 years prior to doing the podcast, I had been tutoring like in the Boston area and in the New Hampshire area in some very competitive public schools. I was doing a lot of SAT tutoring. I was doing a lot of academic tutoring. And I found myself in a lot of like meetings in the school with teachers and parents and guidance counselors, like really biting my lips, not saying the things that I wanted to say, not identifying the problems that I felt needed identification about the school system generally. So when I started the podcast in 2009, I blurted out, I feel like the first 20 episodes, what my problems were with school, what I believed to be the sort of hidden lessons of school, obedience, conformity, and even as a result of that, a kind of political or philosophical or intellectual apathy. I wound up doing a big series right out of the gate about understanding politics, because I wanted people to understand that I wasn't pursuing political solutions. Like, I didn't believe in the idea that the public schools could be reformed. We did a series on how kids are made to feel defective if they can't conform to that environment of school, and some of the consequences of nonconformity and how students could protect themselves from that. But after I did about 100 episodes, I said, okay, enough. Like, people get it. School is bad. It's right in the title of our show. Let's start talking about what education actually is. So we move from there into, you know, more in-depth series about history. We have had an ongoing series about solutions and alternatives. We did a big series last year about productivity and better organization. We've done series about logic and kind of, you know, looking at pop media examples of people abusing logic or ignoring it completely. We did a, you know, a show about like Bill Maher, for example, who has this very popular HBO show. And we went through episodes of his program, which stands up to the rest of television as a pretty intelligent debate show. And we looked at the fallacies that they used to make that program possible. We did a series on the Trivium method of critical thinking, grammar, logic, and rhetoric. And we even did a series that I was really proud of this past year on the six pillars of self-esteem, which was based on a book by Nathaniel Brandon. And, you know, along the way, we're always, wherever we can, discussing homeschooling, home education, unschooling, and providing suggestions for that as well, talking with people who've done that. I'd like to be doing more of that, but I do try to check in periodically and say, hey, you know, remember to consider these things as well. So the show is very broad. I mean, I think it's a soft sell, this idea that school sucks, especially since we're trying to reach high school and college students. Like, they come to us already on our side. I don't think there's a lot of people between the ages of 16 and 20 who feel very differently about school. And hopefully the show has provided a kind of window or doorway into the philosophy of liberty. I mean, I came to the philosophy of liberty by understanding the problems with the school system and wanting to investigate that more. So I'm hoping more people will do the same and have this, you know, valuable introduction to this philosophy, the work of people like you, Bob Murphy, Jeffrey Tucker. You know, they've all been on the show at one point or another, but we always bring it back to schooling versus education. And that's kind of the niche we've carved out. So there's plenty of work that we can do. I mean, as long as I've gotten to a point now after 300 episodes where as long as something is educational, I'd be willing to do a show about it. I do stay away from current events. I try to make the shows kind of timeless. But if I think it has educational value for my audience, I will definitely prepare a show and put it out.
What are some mistakes that you find home educators making?
I think that unschooling can become a kind of unparenting where some people are just completely hands off with their children. And I don't really, I mean, I'm not a parent myself. And I say that over and over again in the show. And people who are critical of some of the things I say remind me of that frequently. So it is difficult to look at what other people are doing and, you know, have real specific criticisms. But just because you're doing this hands-off approach as far as education is concerned, I hope for people that doesn't turn into a hands-off approach as far as parenting is concerned. That's one caution that I have. Or even addressing the concern that you brought up earlier, not understanding that there are some essential skills that might require, even if it's more subtle, some form of instruction from an educator. Those are the two.
It seems okay. I mean, and those are very good. I know, I can think of home. Well, I'm going to use the term homeschooling just because I sometimes say civil war, even though I know it's full of problems. There's no way I'm going to retrain my brain in middle age at this point. But
right.
But I know successful examples of very successful examples of it. But there is also I think an unreported underbelly of really unsuccessful examples. Now, that's not to say that it would be better to send them to the government indoctrination factory. I'm not in any way saying that, but I know of a lot of cases where, quote, homeschooling really means nothing happens. It really, and it's not even that they have a philosophy of unschooling. It's that the mother has a lot of children. She's totally overwhelmed. The father feels like it's his job to go and provide, you know, materially for the family, so it's up to the wife to do the homeschooling. She can't possibly keep up with it. She's expected to do the house and a million other things, and so the result is basically nothing happens. And this goes on far more than people realize, because we all keep hearing about the spelling bee champion as a homeschooler, and the statistics for college admission are very good for homeschoolers, but the reality is there really is this problem out there of completely overwhelmed parents.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good point. And I'm surprised that anyone in, you know, the second decade of the 21st century would still be trying to do this as an island, you know, with the family as an island. There are so many great resources for, you know, networking with people in your area. One of the things that we've talked about frequently is setting up, you know, some kind of cooperative where people can share the duties of teaching or monitoring or setting up activities. I can imagine that being terribly overwhelming for, you know, one mother or one father with multiple children trying to have some kind of home education environment without any help from anybody else. There's so many resources out there for home education in many states. I mean, it differs from state to state. New Hampshire is obviously pretty friendly for home education, but there's definitely ways to get connected with people in your area to share ideas. Even if you can't come face to face with people, there's, you know, resources online. I could see how there could be like a high level of burnout for a parent, and kids just wind up in front of a video game system. Not that that's entirely uneducational, depending on what they're doing. I think there's a lot of value in that, or there could be a lot of value in that, or in front of YouTube, or God forbid, in front of the television. I could see how that could happen. So I think that I am hoping to, on my show, reach people who are planning on becoming parents. Like, my target demographic is really about 16 to 24. I want high school and college students, and I want people thinking about these things long before they become parents. People have certainly written to me and said, it was because of your show, that I took my children out of public school. And I feel like that's an accomplishment. But quite honestly, I also feel a little worried sometimes. Like, that's quite an impact to have. And, you know, I hope those people who I don't know and I never talked to beyond a couple of email exchanges really thought this out. They really had a plan of action before they did this. And that was one of the reasons why I wanted to even get away from talking so much about the horror show that government school is, because I didn't want to force anyone's hand, so to speak. I wanted to talk about what real education is, the value that it has, different approaches to doing it, provide hopefully some curricula for self-study or home education. But I absolutely agree with the concern that, yes, there probably are a lot of people out there who are not providing an education or not setting up an environment where their children are seeking education for themselves.
Now, there are two reasons I would want to ask you about New Hampshire in particular. One is that you have personal experience there. Mm-hmm. But secondly, New Hampshire is not a state that's just chosen at random on this show. I mean, New Hampshire is the heart of the Free State Project. And sure, there are people, no doubt, out there who are on the fence about whether or not they should commit to moving to New Hampshire. So I'd like you to give us a sense of what specific sorts of resources have developed around, for example, the Free State people who are living in New Hampshire, no doubt many of whom are interested in this kind of education. What are they doing among themselves that would be interesting to our audience here?
I can speak from personal experience. We were able to set up just a small cooperative. It didn't last very long because, people went in different directions. But when I was working near the state capitol a couple years ago, we were able to set up some continuous art groups. There was a school, actually, that was set up called the Scholars Academy that had a real Free State presence and actually got a lot of financial support from Free Staters that went on for a few years. And I think eventually it dissolved because the directors of the school wanted to convert it into a charter school and get state funds instead of having it privately funded. And a lot of interest waned pretty quickly. But there are people just working together in small groups. Play dates where people bring their children together. I'm not super connected to that, but I would like to see a lot more of it happening. I have seen, like I said, some examples of this in the past, but I think the good thing about this is your neighbors could be very, very like-minded, right? So even if it's a problem, people are getting more and more worried about things like CPS, especially people who are doing home education, and that's Child Protective Services for those who, it might be a different acronym for people in different states. But there's support here and there's protection here. And that's important as well. I think that's just as important as people getting together and having an art group. that there are like-minded people nearby in case you have a problem as a result of what you're doing.
Would you say that the biggest stumbling blocks right now to more and more people embracing a home-based education or just something other than the typical government school form of education, would you say most of these stumbling blocks are external restrictions by government or whatever cultural frowning upon this form of education? Or would you say they're more internal, a lack of self-confidence, I'm not sure we could pull it off, I don't think we have the resources, we're not wealthy enough? Where do you think the real obstacles are right now?
Well, I think a lot of those internals that you mentioned are determined by externals. People saying, I can't do this, I'm not qualified, we both need to work. I think that kind of thinking results from external pressures. You know, most people don't leave the school system thinking they're capable of teaching anybody, you know, and they're happy to depend on this system. And I would even think they would want to tell themselves a story about the goodness of the system because they need to put their kids someplace 35 hours a week while they go to work to earn the money that they need. So I'm completely sympathetic to all of the hesitations that people would have about pursuing home education for their own families. I really think it's both. I think there's a lot of economic pressures on people where most home education environments would involve at least one parent staying home multiple days out of the week. That's very difficult to do today. And of course, yeah, I think people don't feel, and I think there's a lot of training in feeling this way, they feel like they're not qualified to do this. This is something that has to be done by experts, you know? So it's both. I hope through the show that people hear stories about others who've done this and others who want to do this, or even young people who've gone through the system, who've been home educated, and they get some success stories, and that builds confidence or shows them at least that, yes, this is something that is possible. And there's ways to do this, even with all the external pressures of the world today. It's very hard for me to speak on external pressures that are related to the government because it's really so different from state to state. New Hampshire is pretty homeschooling friendly. I mentioned that I worked with this boy. I had to check in with his school district periodically. They were extremely flexible with me. They were just happy that we had created this environment and that learning was going on. They did not give me a very specific checklist. There was no periodic testing. They were happy that we, or the advisor, I should say, it was just one person that I was dealing with directly from the school. He was really happy that we had come up with a milieu that was helpful to this boy. I know in some states it's very difficult. We hear these horror stories of parents being arrested. They're saying their children are truant, even though, because they haven't gone through all of the hoops that state has set up to make homeschooling difficult. So the pressures are more extreme in different places around the country, I think.
How can people find your show online? They can go to iTunes and type it in, but do you have a website?
Yeah, absolutely. Our website is schoolsucksproject.com. And if people are new, I would recommend clicking the first tab. It says new, start here. And it'll give you a basic introduction to the show. And it'll show you a bunch of series that we've done on a variety of different topics. There's a list of series that they can click through depending on what their interests are. We have a YouTube channel, which is School Sucks Podcast on YouTube. And I really encourage people to go and look around our website. There's lots of great resources and lots of great content there. If people are interested in getting more involved, we have a group on Facebook. If you just search Facebook for School Sucks Project, I would happily add anyone interested in home education or alternative education to the group. And there's a lot of dialogue that goes on there. You know, on the website, we have forums, too, that are broken up into all different categories. People can come to the website and join groups similar to how you would do on Facebook. So we have a home educators group. We have a unschool students group or a high school students group on the website. So I encourage website forums are certainly dying down because of Facebook. But if people wanted to come and make very specific connections, that's still possible through schoolsucksproject.com.
All right, I will make sure and direct people to the site and the podcast on the show notes page, which is tomwoods.com /303. Brett, thanks for being with us today. I had a number of requests to have you on. I've been meaning to do it anyway, and I'm glad we're able to make it work. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Tom. Anytime.
Ah, hi everyone, this is Brett. Did you know that throughout 2013 and 2014, between our podcast, video work, and bonus shows, School Sucks has produced an average of about 12 pieces of content a month? Wow. Another thing you didn't know is that recently our team of accountants has valued each piece of that content at 50 cents. Well, haven't they ever heard of the subjective theory of value, you ask? I don't know. I don't talk to them because they all live in India, you know, because of outsourcing. But as a result of these recent findings, our director of loss prevention has advised me to ask each one of you to go to schoolsucksproject.com and join our AV club for $6 a month, a figure arrived at, as I'm also told by the accountants, by a careful calculation of the product of 12 and 50 cents. And you know, I think they're right. Once you sign up, you'll get access to a ton of cool, unreleased, and behind-the-scenes stuff, but you will also be doing your part to help keep this show going and growing and to help this important message reach those who need it most. Poor people. And by poor people, of course, I mean high school and college students. So go to schoolsucksproject.com/AV and sign up. Shaka 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 bop 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 bop.